Command Point now has merch. Link in the description. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Command Point. My name's Ryan. Today, I'm here with my co-host, Shane.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. We had a good trip to Syracuse.
Yes, we did.
So we went to the Salt City GT in Syracuse, which was a golden ticket event. Well, not a golden, but a ticket event. They're technically all called golden tickets, I guess, but it wasn't like an all expenses paid one. But it was unfortunately not a lot of people made it out. But because it was a golden ticket event, I mean, Ryan, the people that showed up were like pretty legit.
It was a Shark Tank for sure. Yeah, it was you, me, Adrian, out of Brooklyn,
Ryan Wilfong.
Yes. The Las Vegas and, Open kill team winner.
Yep. And Jeremy, I forget how his last name is pronounced, but he was a top 10 player at KTO with Intercession. So,
yeah,
it was pretty stacked. Yeah. I mean, it was like not easy.
No, it was not.
Yeah. So I did take first place with, yep, with I ran Legionnaires.
Mm-hmm.
Went 4 wins and a draw. I tied with Orion Wilfong, who's running Demons, by the way.
Yeah, and he wound up coming in second place, correct?
Yeah, he actually went undefeated. I think he won 3 and had 2 draws.
Yeah, yeah, no big deal. Just running Compendium Demons. All right.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
He is. He is so good. After the first round, I got paired up against him round one. After the first round, like, we've known Orion for a while, but I told someone, I think it was you actually, where I said, I don't care who's on the other side of the table, I'm betting on Orion Wilfong every single time, and I don't think whatever faction he runs, I don't think it matters. I think he's just that good.
He's a very good, like, especially with... like, he very much specializes with melee teams.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, his thing. And there's not a lot of players like that, weirdly, I feel. I think there's going to be more as, like, more melee teams have come out, especially recently.
Mm-hmm.
But he definitely leans on the melee side of that spectrum, which is cool. He's a fun player to watch, and he's a fun player to play against as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah. My game with him was crazy because it was Demons versus Legionary on Into the Dark. And, like, I guess we'll go through the game later, maybe. But, like, man, for Nurgle Demons, that is not a fun matchup on Into the Dark.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
All right. So, aside from, obviously, our trip to Salt City, have you been up to any sort of, like, hobbying at all or experimenting with any other teams besides the Nurgle Legionaries?
Well, as far as kill team goes, I have been messing around with a lot of High Rotech Circle, which I really enjoy. And I talked about this a little bit on Travis's podcast, just another kill team podcast, which so I was on there recently talking about TTS and High Rotech Circle and stuff like that. But I've been running Higher Tech Circle in the CTS event on the Command Point Discord. That's our TTS league that goes on. And I think that Higher Tech is I think they're the best team against Chaos Cults.
Okay.
And I, for what it's worth, I don't think they have a winning matchup against Chaos Cults. I don't think anybody does. But I think they're the best team against them right now. They're just kind of weird and hard to play, and not a lot of people like them. But I've played against them since the Iconarch change. I've played against Chaos Cultist with Higher Tech twice, and I have won on Into the Dark, and I have tied on Open Board, but it was Capture against some pretty good players. So I like inevitably Chaos Cult is going to get nerfed eventually. And I think when that day comes, I think Higher Tech is like a nightmare matchup for them.
So do you want to talk about exactly why Higher Tech is such a, I guess, a good matchup into cults?
So it's like all the stars align for cults in the matchup because you get to, like, first of all, they have one of the best, if not the best, Alpha Strikes in the game. Like turn one Alpha Strikes with the Cryptech, specifically the Chronomancer with the Ion Stave, who can, like, you can Recon Dash him forward. You can pay a CP to leech power off of another Necron to give the Chronomancer 4 APL. And you can, if you want, you can Chronometron himself and then move dash, I want to say 12 more inches on top of your Recon Dash, so 15 inches. And you fly and just, like, alpha the entire other team. Mm-hmm. Which is, the profile is 5 attacks on 3s, 3-3 with lethal 5 and stun. And that is just going to obliterate a Chaos Cult team, ideally. But there's more to it than just that. So the Nanomine, which is the big slow bubble, is really good against melee teams. You can, like, really control where they're able to threaten you. And just, like, debilitate their movement up the board. Like, against a team like Cults, where they have basically no long-range shooting, you can go full engage with Necrons and use Intractable March on turn one, so you're basically just, you don't have 4-inch movement, you just have 6-inch movement with your whole team. They have a lot of really good shooting, and if you take the Lethal 5 melee equipment, their melee on the Immortals is just good enough that a cultist can't, like, charge in and reliably survive against you if mm-hmm. they want to, like, try and mutate. So, I mean, the damage breakpoints are really good with the Tesla Carbines and the Gauss Blasters, depending on whether you're on Open or on Into the Dark. So the damage breakpoints are pretty good against Chaos Cult. You've got an awesome Alpha Strike. You've got really good shooting. You get to, like, Higher Tech gets, like, the full potential of their toolkit in the matchup. And on top of that, like, the Despotech can just, like, majorly threaten on turn one. And that's one of the things I really like about them in the matchup, is that Higher Tech can threaten on turn one in ways that many teams cannot. They're capable of being so, so aggressive in the early game. And I think you can actually, like, really threaten the other team pretty effectively. So I like that a lot. And I mean, I still think cults will probably usually beat Higher Tech if all things are even right now, but, you know, they'll become worse eventually. And once they get brought into line, that has the potential to be a really brutal matchup for Chaos Cult.
Right. Well, all right. Outside of that, Shane, what else have we been doing? Like, outside a kill team, but still hobby-wise.
I've been trying out 10th a little bit. You're running a Combat Patrol League.
Yes. Yeah. I've been running a Combat Patrol League at one of the local game stores here in Rochester, Millennium Games. And we had 19 people sign up for this. Which,
that's a lot.
It's a lot of people. I was not expecting 19 people to sign up for it. And there's a chance that more people are actually going to sign up this Tuesday. It runs for 5 weeks, but, like, signups are open. So
I showed up and I'm just playing some orcs. I'm, like, looking around and I'm like, wait, are all these people here for Combat Patrol? Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
But that was fun. I mean, it's the only game of 10th I've really played. It was pretty cool. I mean, I like orcs. It's easy for me to have fun playing orcs, I think, in any game system. I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to playing another game pretty soon. I've kind of missed orcs, by the way, because
I know you have.
Commandos just are not the same, and I don't want to play Compendium.
They are way different than back in ye old days of Kill Team first edition, I guess we'll call it, with your Orc Knob team, super elite. Like,
it was fun, and like even just the Horde of Boys, I miss a little bit too. Just like Commandos don't feel like Orcs to me; they never really have. In terms of like how they play,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, Commandos are cool and stuff, and
yeah, they're cool. So. But you like your Orcs to be more brutal than Cunning.
Yes, I think that nails it. I never even really liked the shooty Orcs last edition, so I'm definitely more of a brutal Orc player. And that Combat Patrol box is pretty brutal, and they've got the Death Dread and the three copters, and the war boss, and a couple of squads of boys, and they just crump. They just crump so hard.
They do. Fun. Yeah, Combat Patrol's fun. The rest of the like 10th edition, like competitively speaking, I think is in a bit of a rough spot right now, especially with like the lack of a real nerf to like the Towering keyword with the knights and everything. Basically, like cover and obscuring terrain doesn't matter for the knight player, and they just leaf blower their opponents off the table, which does not sound fun. So, but hey, there's no knights in Combat Patrol, so
yeah. And then Eldar too are pretty disgusting, I've heard.
Yeah, and big 40k. I don't know how their Combat Patrol box performs. I was looking at the rules for them the other night, and they seem like on par with some of the other boxes, so I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do want to try a game of 2,000 points, like full 40k pretty soon with Orcs once I get the chance. Just finding time to do that, you know. Well, I'm sure I will at some point. But yeah, it's exciting. I like the way that 10th plays, at the very least, balance aside. And I'm kind of excited to see what it looks like once they clean up some of the craziness that's going on right now.
Yeah.
But over here in Kill Team, we have a bit of craziness of our own. So, I mean, I can't.
Yeah, we do.
It's not like totally unavoidable.
So
go ahead.
Sorry, I think you lagged out a little bit there. But Shane, we went to Salt City. Obviously, you won. I won Best Painted, which I'm pretty stoked about, not going to lie. But yeah, I guess, do we want to just like start talking about like your games and kind of like go through the tournament that was Salt City?
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, you won Best Painted with the army that I was playing, because I was playing my Legionnaires, which you painted.
Yes.
And I think Eric caught wind of that, and he really liked them. But no, the tournament was fun. So I went 4 wins and a draw, and I am happy to talk about my games. So my first game, I played against Adrian Bonavento, who was the winner of the New York Open last year and placed second at LVO this past year. Very good player. And he was running Commandos. And I think he's been practicing his Commandos for quite a bit now. He was originally known for more of being like a Intercession player. And actually, if you want to hear him talk about Intercession, the 12 Days of Kill Team, he was the Intercession person. So
that's right.
Which, God, that reminds me. I mean, I'm going to have to start thinking about factions for that this year, because that was a hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Also, some things about that video may have changed after the balance data slate for Intercession. So,
yeah, which we kind of haven't talked about the balance data slate, but.
Oh, true. we'll talk about that after your games then, I guess.
Yeah. Something to look forward to. But yeah, he was playing Commandos, and I've known Adrian as a very, very good player, but I've never played against him before. I'm running my tried and true Legionaries, Nurgle and Slaanesh, and I actually don't think I took any Slaanesh this tournament.
Yeah, you told me that you didn't take any of the you didn't take any Shrive Talon in any of your games, I think.
No, I took the Shrive Talon. I just never took any Slaanesh.
Okay.
It's kind of weird actually, because like there was no like shooty hordes at this tournament, now that I think about it. Like, that's weird.
The closest I saw a shooty horde was, ironically enough, we were talking about how Ryan is a really good melee player, but in my game against him, he brought out the Tzeentch,
The pink
yeah,
horrors.
the pink horrors, and he was just gunning down my cultists because he gave them all whatever like the special equipment is that like buffs their damage or something, I
Yeah, the
think.
trinket of flux. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it brought it up to like a 3-5, which I mean
Yeah.
that thing just smokes. So yeah.
But yeah, so I'm playing against Adrian. We're on open board, which I would have rather had it into the dark for this personally, but still, commandos I don't think have a great matchup into Legionnaires, but Adrian was just so prepared and he was like so on his game. Like he plays like he does one thing I like, and I think everybody that wants to be a competitive player should aspire to do this, where he is constantly communicating intent, and it's like a constant discussion with the opponent as to what this guy's doing here, like what's the goal? And you're not going to run into gotchas really if you're
Yeah.
playing that's doing this. So it was a very pleasant game because of that first and foremost. But yeah, so we end up on loot on open board, which I think is like the worst circumstances I can get against commandos. I would much rather be on Into the Dark, and I'd much rather not be on loot. Commandos are pretty good on loot. Granted, this is after the change to loot from the last data slate, which greatly helps elite teams. So before you could only get 3 points on each loot, now you can get 4 points. What this effectively means is that the teams that are able to like rush forward aggressively on turn one and like get that 4-2 primary lead on loot, it's a lot easier to crawl back in the late game. Whereas like before, that's like a really tough thing to come back from. Like you need to like put your foot on the gas right away to make up that primary deficit, and elite teams just can't always do that because they're really incentivized to play conservatively on turn one because they're so wildly outactivated. But yeah, he took that big lead on turn one. He took infiltrate and he scored one of his infiltrate tech ops. I just got my two primaries and just sort of set up. He did have his I loved the way he set up his breacher. So he gave him the dynamite to his breacher, and he forward deployed the breacher, and he put it in range of the comms. So that way he could, and he put him in a building in the forward deploy. It was like within 6 inches, he could like hit me on one of the like quote unquote safe objectives on my board side of the board. And so my champ came up. I put him in cover. I'm like, this guy's probably going to get hit with dynamite, but the thing is, like, when you have mutagenic flesh and you're in cover and you have Nurgle mark, so you're getting a free crit. The expected damage that I imagine usually ends up being like 4 damage. They might get 2 hits on you if they spike and you whiff, like 2 hits through after saves. But typically, I mean, this is what I do with legionaries, is I kind of dangle my pieces out for these big aggressive plays from my opponent, and I've done it a million times. This is just how you win with Legionnaires. And I expect to take some damage from it, but he comes out and he throws that dynamite at the end of the turn, and he only gets like 2 hits.
Oof.
I think he gets a crit and a hit, and I have a cover save and I roll my 3 up, and I think I failed it actually, and then I re-rolled it and got it, and one of them turns into a crit, so I take no damage from dynamite. And then on turn two, it's like he wins initiative, and he like gets a charge off, and oh my god, he just like whiffs so hard. He literally has like 3 instances on turn two, between turn two and turn three, where he would roll like 4 dice and get like 2 or 3 ones.
Oh my God.
I watched this happen like 3 times in a row, and it was brutal. He got like I think it would have been a really close game, honestly, if the dice weren't like if he didn't get so brutally screwed by the dice.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just like giga whiffed like 4 times,
Jeez.
and it ended up being like a very convincing win for the Legionaries, but he played very well and he had a really great rest of the tournament. He didn't lose again. Fun game. The Legionaries just kind of ended up slowly killing the orcs and there just wasn't enough bodies by the end. And I was able to catch up on loot and I scored all my secondaries, I think. Which I actually did a much better job of scoring Tac Ops in this tournament than I have in past tournaments, the Legionaries. I've said this a lot where I really struggle to max Tac Ops with this team because they don't have a good faction. But I managed to max Tac Ops like most of my games. That was why I won technically. Well, no. If I was in a tiebreaker scenario, I had it very easily. And the main tiebreaker in this tournament was Tac Ops.
Gotcha.
So that was like a personal accomplishment for me was scoring well in Tac Ops with Legionaries.
Yeah. So what were the Tac Ops that you took for that game? Do you remember?
Against Adrian, I believe I had taken, I know I took Robin Ransack, Eliminate Guards, and I think it was Rout. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm like pretty certain it was Rout. And I think I got all three. So that was good. And then on turn two, I got paired into a Necron player, a Hierotech player, and he actually had gotten like the bye on turn one or on round one. So he was a pretty new player and it was just kind of like a chill game. He was a super nice guy. He ended up winning best support at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we were on Into the Dark and it was Legionaries versus Hierotech, and he was pretty new to Hierotech. So I there isn't a ton to say about this game. I did some cool stuff with the aspiring champ, just like double killing people and, throwing legionary operatives into melee and just killing things.
Yep.
And I think I maxed Tac Ops here. Not 100% sure, but I think I did. But then I went into round three against Will Fong. And yes. He was 2-0 at this point, and I was 2-0, and he's playing demons. And I know demons pretty well. And I've never played the matchup before on the Legionary side. I played on the demon side against Khorne demons on open board, and that's like not fun for demons. But I've always thought that like Nurgle demons, especially on Into the Dark against, I'm sorry, Nurgle Legionaries against demons, especially on Into the Dark, is like not great because you can't shoot him off the board on turn one. It's just not realistic with Into the Dark with all the walls and stuff.
Yeah.
And so they just get to move their guys up the board. And he took Bloodletters and Plague Bearers. So every one of his models is getting 6 damage on a crit in melee. And that is half of my health. And
yeah.
He's got 12 guys and I've got 6 guys.
Yeah.
We ended up tying in this game, but it is the first time I've ever gotten tabled playing Legionaries. He had like 4 guys. It was like a bloodbath. We just ran at each other and, you know, we smacked each other
mm-hmm.
until I ran out of models. But he did a little better than me, I think, on Tac Ops. And we went totally even on everything now that I think about it. But I was able to get a 4-point primary swing on turn 3. And then he got it back on turn 4. He had a misplay where he revealed Robin Ransack at a time when he definitely shouldn't have. And I was able to kill the guy and deny the 2nd point. He definitely could have gotten that mm-hmm. 2 points if he just saved it like a little after. And I think I misplayed on turn 1 with just the way that I set up. I like really like moved my guys up on one hallway with the Shrive Talon and the Meltagun so that I could have the Meltagun open the door, walk up and cap the point. And then the Shrive Talon could walk up and put the Grizzly Mark down because I'm like, he's never going to get this point. At the very least, I should be able to go 3-3. And in hindsight, that was, I could have just put the Shrive Talon on there and just kept the point with him and kept the Melta back. And realistically, he's probably not getting that point from the Shrive Talon anyway. Or he would have like, it would have been a struggle to do it because it's not easy for any of his models to deal with the Shrive Talon. But instead, the way it worked out was my Melta was up in the room with the up in the little hallway with the Shrive, and he wins initiative on turn two, and he just has a Bloodletter come in and just one for one, just not even one for one, he just kills the Melta gun in just one melee combat, and it's like that's a Bloodletter, one of the six Bloodletters, one of the 12 demons just solo killed one of my Marines.
Yeah, you can't afford to trade like that.
Yeah, none of them were going to be able to do that to my Shrive Talon. I don't think he's like a total pain in the butt because the fight first, I should have just had him in the room. But yeah, we ended up tying like 16-16. It was a great game. I think if we were on open board, I have a feeling the Legionaries would have done a little bit better. Demons, like the all melee demons on Into the Dark against Nurgle Legionary is one of the toughest matchups, I think, for Legionaries, which is weird to say because,
yeah,
at least on Into the Dark, it's one of the toughest matchups. I don't know. But yeah, and then on day two, I got to play against Jeremy, who is, I mentioned earlier, the Intercession player that finished in the top pod at KTO. And I didn't get to play him at KTO, so I was excited about this opportunity. And he was running Intercession here this weekend. So we had a good old-fashioned Legionary versus Intercession scrap that I haven't really actually had to play at all since they nerfed Mutagenic Flesh. Because Mutagenic Flesh, the way it was before, just like that was a really bad matchup for Intercessors. Because your bolters would be like 2 damage normal. But after the nerf to mutagenic, where it's a minimum 3, the bolters are like totally fine. And you can like actually lean into shooting and bolt rifles and stuff and just like try and whittle them down in a way that you really couldn't before. But what surprised me in this game is Jeremy actually ended up taking 4 assault intercessors. He had the gunner. And he had like another bolt rifle, and this was on Into the Dark as well. In this game I took Robin Ransack again. I took Headhunter, and I took Assassinate Target. So the one misplay that I think he made is he chose the Assassinate Target to be his Grenadier. He could have made it like one of the bolt rifles that sat back. I think I would have been able to get it regardless, but it would have been a little trickier for me to get that bolt rifle if he was the Assassinate Target. But with the Grenadier, like he's going to run up and he has to get close to do what he wants to do, which means he's opening himself up to getting killed by my guys. And that is what happened. Like so to break down the game, we played pretty passive turn one. We went 3-3 on primary, and on turn two, he wins initiative. And, you know, there's the anointed dangling on the doorway, sitting there in conceal. And he moved dashes with his gunner and shoots the crack profile into the anointed in the Grizzly Trophy range with mutagenic flush on. And it did no damage. And, you know, this is like, I've told this story about a million different games, like over and over. And that's just like what wins games for Legionaries, I think. More than anything. And then, you know, there goes his initiative. He kind of just ends up kind of being a waste of initiative trying to kill that anointed. But it's like such a juicy target just sitting out there, and you just won initiative, and it's like, let's just like throw a bunch of damage at this guy, but yeah. It just doesn't work.
And it's like, what do you do? Like, what other alternative can you do, really?
I think the correct play probably is to like be very cognizant of where the anointed's going to be at the end of turn one and set up to pressure the other parts of the board where the anointed is not on. Like you want to force the anointed to come to you first, probably, and then try to like punish him, but it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then so my anointed then responded by charging 2 of his intercessors and killing them both in melee with the double fight. And then he comes in and kills the anointed, and then my champ comes in and kills another guy that killed the anointed, And on the other side of the board, I just had the Shrive Talon with the Grizzly Mark, like in a room by himself on a mid, like board or midline objective. And it's just, he's just never getting that. Like he would have to come into the room, get in there, deal with the Shrive Talon, and then it would cost him 2 APL just to secure the point. So that was just never going to happen. Although I did run into a spot where it's like my Aspiring Champ died and my Anointed died, and I didn't have Robin Ransack yet. And I was like, I'm sitting there with my my Melta Gunner and my Reaper Chain Cannon. And I'm like, I need to get Robin Ransack. So I it's like turn three or four. I think it's turn three. I pay CP for Hateful Assault, which I never use, which is the Fight Twice ploy.
Okay.
And I just have my I have my Balefire Acolyte cast the spell on my Melta Gunner to give all of his weapon profiles brutal and lethal five. So his fists got brutal and lethal five.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. I just had the chain cannon charge and fight him in melee twice. And then I had the Melta there to charge and fight him in melee twice with hitting on twos because of combat support with brutal and lethal five fists. So like the strongest, he's like a pro boxer out there.
Yeah, he's all juiced up on that chaos magic.
Yeah. And yeah, they just punched the Intercessor in the face until I got Robin Ransack and he was dead, which was a really funny. I've never had to do that play before. And I actually ended up trying this exact play against you in the next game, Ryan.
You did.
And it didn't work out.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
But yeah, I took the win over Jeremy. He was a really cool guy, a really fun opponent. Great player.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ryan in the fifth round, I'm in a spot where like I could potentially not win the tournament if I lose. And who did I get paired up against, Ryan?
You got me and the Chaos Cult.
Yeah. So they were going to put us on. So Eric ended up like, it was either going to be Into the Dark or Open.
Yes.
And Eric like looks at me and he's like, hey, you've played on that Into the Dark board a lot. Like, would you rather play? And I'm like, dude, don't ask me. I have so much stake in this. Do not ask me.
Yeah.
So we just flipped a coin basically. And we ended up on Open, which I was very grateful for.
And I was not.
yeah. So Ryan, why don't you talk about how turn one went in this game? Because.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. It was kind of like the biggest play of the tournament for you, I think.
It was the Oppenheimer bomb.
And yeah, I'll talk about like the deployment a little bit. So as most of you know, there are a lot of bodies in the Chaos Cult kill team. And unfortunately, the deployment zone I wound up getting it was not ideal. It was the I don't know what the community calls
nacho.
It was the nacho deployment, yeah. So, like, you have the diagonal edge of the board, basically. And, it was unfortunate in that I basically had, like, one large wall to hide behind. And really, it's on me. What I should have done was try to spread all my guys out. Just don't even worry about keeping them all in. Heavy cover, just set them up and conceal. And then keep as many of them as possible outside of 2 inches of each other to avoid this Oppenheimer bomb that's coming at my face in the form of a Warpfire Acolyte deployed right at the edge of your diagonal deployment zone. Instead, I pretty much group everybody up behind this wall. They're all just right on top of each other, and I'm just trying to squish them as far forward as I can to avoid you getting line of sight on them. Unfortunately, it was just not possible. So I'll leave it with you, Shane. You can tell the rest of this turn one story.
Yeah, this whole game was just insanity. So we're playing on capture, which is great for Chaos Cult. So I know I'm like, I have to kill a lot of guys on turn one or else I'm probably screwed.
Mm-hmm.
So I recon dash with my Balefire, and you had initiative and you took it because, like, you know, you can move some guys out of the debris, but I mean, there were still like 10 guys there. So I go with the Balefire. He moved dashes. He effectively had 12 inches where he could go up the side of the board, which on the diagonal deployment, if you deploy in the edge and you recon dash and move dash and shoot, like you can get almost to the edge of the board.
Yeah.
And it's almost unavoidable unless like every angle is like covered for terrain. And I get the mother of all blasts, the mother of all fire blasts. And I killed, so with the bell fire blast, it's 3-4, you know, blast 2, but it's the real thing here is it's splash 1.
Yeah.
And so that means like that for every extra shot you get, there's more mortals splashing around. There's more chances to roll crits and to get mortals and to kill another guy, even if a guy survived barely earlier. And 10 of your models died.
Yes. So that was cultists and all of the Dark Commune operatives, except for, I think...
There was one Blessed Blade.
Yes, yeah, one Blessed Blade was able to get out.
And that Blessed Blade ended up being important.
Yes, he did. So, yeah, he wound up being an absolute unit.
So I kill that blob of guys, and at that point I think we're both like in the mindset of, well, okay.
After we spent like, I think it was 15 minutes of like resolving just that one attack.
Oh, it's
more, because like you said, every single attack you get, that's more mortal wounds.
Yeah, so you're moving the dice.
It's exponential, the amount of damage that you were doing. So yeah. So after we resolved that, I was just like, in my head, I'm like, well, that happened. This game is probably over. So I took a quick bathroom break, and then I came back. And in my head, I'm thinking, you know, I just want to play a good game. I want to try and get as many points as possible, even though I only have like 5 models left on the board.
Yeah.
I'm not going to concede here because that's not fair to myself, nor is it to Shane. So I'm going to play this out. So I come back and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go now. And then I think that's when I charged. So...
I think you charged me on turn 2. So I think the rest of turn 1 was just like nothing. Like we just scored.
It was kind of just like movement. Yeah. I moved a couple bodies up on 2 objectives. Importantly, I had control of the 3 objectives closest to me, and you had the 3 objectives closest to you.
Yeah. Despite that big thing, I wasn't able to get far enough up the board to like take a 4-2 primary lead on turn 1. But, you know, in my mind, I'm like, there's no possible way to lose this game. It's just, like, impossible.
Yeah.
And, importantly, I had taken Executioner, and I made my Balefire the Executioner. Because I figured he would be able to get 2 kills after that. You know, one other kill on another turn. And so on turn 2, you win initiative.
Yeah.
And so we're 3, we're technically, I'm up 4-3 at this point, because I have the 1 Executioner point and 3 primary. And you... go with the Blessed Blade and you charge the Balefire.
Yep.
And you roll like 3 crits and a hit.
Yes, that was it.
That means you kill him.
Yeah.
I
just kill him.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, all right, you know, that's whatever. That sucks. I'm not going to get that tech up, but I mean, I'm not even close to being worried about the game yet.
Yeah.
I do have my Anointed, and I'm like, let's have the Anointed charge. And I wanted to charge the Blessed Blade and kill him and then pistol shoot like a 1 health cultist.
Mm-hmm.
Blessed Blade had like, he must have had like 5 wounds left. So in my mind, it's like a free kill. So I'm like, I don't even need to go demon mode. This is fine. I'll just charge, fight, shoot. Because if I go demon mode, I can't shoot. And I think, one of those guys was my eliminate guard. So I charge. It was the cultist I charged.
Yes.
And I was going to shoot the Blessed Blade. So I charged the cultist, and I have a grizzly trophy too. So you're only rolling 3 dice on the cultist.
Right.
And I get 1 hit out of 4 dice, 5 attacks hitting on 3s. And you get 2 crits and 2 hits.
Yes.
On the cultist. So I'm in my mind, I'm like, wait a minute, this is really bad.
Yeah. Because if this happens, then my cultist is going to be able to mutate.
Yeah, and that was my eliminate guard, so I have to kill him. So I'm like, my best odds of killing him, I just parry one of the normal hits and I take two crits. So I take 6 damage. Yeah, because you had 2 crits, 1 normal. That's what it was.
Right.
And we had to get a judge call and like figure this shit out, because if you use Veterans of the Long War, the Legionary Tactical Ploy, it says if you just resolved a fight action or a shooting attack where you did no damage to the enemy operative, repeat that shooting attack or that fight action.
Mm-hmm.
So technically the way this is worded means that if you fight a cultist and he does damage to you and you Veterans of the Long War, because you're repeating that combat, you get to fight again before the cultist mutates, which is a pretty weird and kind of cool interaction. And I needed it because I did it again and I killed the freaking one cultist and I got eliminate guards, and then, but you got another crit on me. So my anointed took 9 damage in this combat.
Yep.
And then he did get to shoot his pistol and kill the blessed blade. But I'm like, at this point, still, it's like, I'm not worried about this.
Yeah, I have 3 models left at this point.
You have 3
in the
models
game.
Left.
Yeah.
Yep. One of them, I think 2 of them are mutants, and one of them is just a cultist.
Yeah.
And that cultist charges my anointed. He has 3 attacks.
Yep.
And he needs a crit, and he gets the crit, and he kills my anointed, and he becomes a mutant.
Yep.
And I'm like, all right, well, I've lost 2 guys, and, you know, he's got 3 models left. And it hasn't, like, quite sunk in until, like, the next activation.
Yeah.
About to happen.
At this point in the game, right after that combat occurred, that's when I thought to myself, hang on, I have 3 mutants on the board at this point. They're going to become torments as long as all of them survive the rest of this turn, which at this point in the game, I've reason to believe they do because of the sight lines and everything to your other, like, further on targets. And I'm thinking, hey, with 3 torments on control, if I can just kill all these other legionnaires and get board control, like, I'm going to be able to come back from this.
Yeah. So there was one other thing that was keeping me not from, like, panicking yet. And that's because I took the Chosen in this game because I like his melee in the matchup, and we were on capture. So the extra mission action wasn't going to matter from the champion. So I have my Chosen charge one of your mutants, and the Chosen rolls 3 normal hits and no crits. I roll 2 ones because I'm hitting on 2s, or no, I was hitting on 3s because of sickening aura. But I roll 2 misses and 3 normal hits, and I don't get a crit on my lethal 5 that does 7 damage, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I hit you once. You get 2 crits, 2 hits on this mutant. I hit you once. You parry the other one, and you make, like, a bunch of feel no pains, and then I hit you again, and you survive, because 8 damage is usually not going to kill a mutant. And then you hit me for 11 damage, and I've got 2 health left. And then you activate that mutant and kill my aspiring champion. And then I'm like, he's about to have 3 torments. The only models I have left on the board are my 2 gunners and my icon bolt gun.
Yeah.
And I have Robin Ransack, and I am not going to get a melee kill this game. And I'm like pretty nervous. So I have my Reaper chain cannon shoot, you know, like our next turn happens. And like, we still are 3-3 primary. I couldn't get a primary lead.
Yeah.
And I have a dead tac op with, I can't get the second planet executioner. I am not getting Robin Ransack. I don't think. I see one route to get it, but it's unlikely. And my other one is eliminate guards, which I'm like, maybe I'll get that. I don't even know. I don't end up getting it. Spoiler alert. But turn 3 comes around and you have 3 torments, and I have 2 legionary gunners and an icon Volklin with no melee. They don't have blades even. They just have fists. And so, like, I put a bunch of bullets into one of the torments.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really trying to move in a way that, like, I can't get charged by them. And I make like a very risky play, and I have my Meltagun walk up to a full health torment. I have 2 CP left. I pay 1 for malignant aura, so you don't get a defense dice because AP 2. And then you roll 1 less defense dice from Malignant Aura. And I have another CP for a reroll in case I need it. So I shoot you. I get 3 hits through. I get 2 hits through, and I use my reroll to get a 3rd hit.
Yeah.
I think I had a crit. So you have to make 19 feel no pains.
Yeah, no big deal. 19 feel no pains.
You die barely.
Had I made one more feel no pain, he would have survived, and that would have been huge.
Yeah. So I barely kill this freaking torment, and I'm like, all right, I can breathe a little bit, and I like take a bunch of shots at one of your other torments, and I'm like, all right, I think I can, you know, I'm like looking at the torment, and the next turn happens, and like
the torment had like four wounds left on him.
Yeah,
at this point.
Four wounds left.
Yeah,
and I'm like, you know what? Let's turn on that double fight.
Yep.
And let's have my Reaper Chain Cannon charge the guy, because if I can get a crit and a hit, right, then that's seven damage coming through. Realistically. Maybe not realistically.
I'm unlikely. It's at least probably like 60-40 chance you kill him.
Yeah. And I'm like, let's just get, you know, let's charge this guy, because then I get Robin Ransack, and then it's like you have a.
And then
that's
one guy
GG.
Left. Yeah.
It's just, yeah. And so I did get that through, and I got seven damage through because I crit you and I hit you, and you made how many feel no pains?
Six out of seven feel no pains.
And then you splatted my Reaper Chain Cannon.
Yep.
And it's still 3-3 every turn on primary. It's like 9-9 on primary. And I have eliminate guards, one point on executioner. You got Robin Ransack off of that.
Yes, I did.
And I think you had a point in eliminate guards maybe or something.
Not eliminate guards. The ones I took the entire tournament were route, tear through, and Robin Ransack.
Okay, yep.
So I think I may have scored a point on route during that combat.
Something. I think you did.
I think I was just out, actually. I think I was just out, because I remember we measured it.
Right. So the rest of that one turn, on the final turn, I stayed out of your charge range. You ran that guy away that had Robin Ransack.
Yeah, because he, at this point, he only has 3 health. He's my Robin Ransack, so if I want this point, I gotta get him behind cover so he doesn't get shot by your bolter, who you put like the double shoot on, or you had thought about it, something like that.
Yeah, and I also had the Melta too. So you move that guy away in a spot where I'm not going to be able to shoot him, and you're just going to get that second point on Robin Ransack no matter what I do. And we start measuring out on turn 4 like the odds of you getting tear through, and like one of your guys is like just out of being able to do it. So I'm like, all right, at best he's going to get one point. And the guy that would be getting the other point is the Robin Ransack guy who you hit in the building.
Right.
And his only way to get through would be to go through the door. So I ran
the door on this piece of terrain. Yeah.
Yeah. So I ran that bolt gun guy onto the objective, and he's the icon. So he's 4 APL. I put him on the objective, so it takes that point away from you. And he's blocking the door, so that way the other guy can't come around and get tear through. So you're going to get no points on tear through. And even though you get 2 torments on that objective by the end, you don't control it because I took it from you. And then it was 4 APL to 4 APL. So I go up 3-2 on primary on the last turn. We both finish with 2 TAC Ops. Because actually you didn't get route. You only got the 2 points on Robin Ransack.
Yes.
And I had 12 primary to your 11, and we both had 2 TAC Ops, and I think I won like 14-13.
Yes. Yeah, I think that was the final score.
And that is one of the craziest games I've ever played.
Yeah, it was definitely the craziest, probably like most fun game of Kill Team. It was the craziest game of Kill Team I've ever played. It was definitely the most fun game of Kill Team I've played in a while, too.
Yeah, I had a blast.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Especially just, I mean, but like the, like, yeah, I lost the game, but like you can take a couple things away from this. You can take away, first off, the indomitable will of the human spirit that resides in me, you know.
And I will tell you, when you went to the bathroom, when you went to the bathroom after that turn 1, the room was bleak because everybody knew what just happened.
Oh,
they were
okay.
Like,
yeah.
Oh man, that sucked. They're like, yeah, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And then you came back and it's like turn 3, and I'm like, I think I'm gonna lose.
Yeah.
And everybody just starts cheering.
So yeah, you can take away that, but then you can also take away the fact that this team, Chaos Cult, is overpowered as hell, man. Like, I got five models left. It's turn one, and I still almost came back and won the game. Like, if just a few more dice rolls went my way, man, I would have won that game. This team is wildly overpowered. Games Workshop, please nerf this team now.
Yep.
But I mean, that's all we've been talking about for like the past like month or however long the team's been out. So yeah, speaking of potential nerfs,
who would
stuff,
win? Legionary Kill Team.
Yeah. So yeah, that was basically the tournament. Shane, you got a really cool championship ring out of it. I got a nice best painted plaque.
That ring, as soon as I saw it, I was like, I need this tournament. I just want the ring. It's like a big fat ring. It's like kind of heavy. It's like
it's a Super Bowl ring. Yeah,
basically that's what it's like.
But do we want to talk about the data slate a little bit? Because I don't think we've had the opportunity to discuss it since we're on the topic of nerfing Chaos Cult.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, we didn't do a data slate video. Let me pull it up really quick because I'm sure there's one thing I will forget if I don't have it up. But the data slate was ultimately like, I don't want to say it was disappointing, but it kind of was because of the cult stuff.
Yeah.
But the other things in the data slate are pretty cool. So I guess to get started, I mentioned earlier the loot change. And a lot of people are talking about like, oh, this is actually like good for Chaos Cult. And that is true. It is. It is better for Chaos Cult, this loot change. But I think you don't look at it in that lens because ideally Chaos Cult is going to get nerfed eventually. And this loot change will yield a better game. I didn't find the old loot style to be interesting where it was like Vet Guard play into the breach and go first and grab the two middle objectives.
Yeah.
And then their back objectives. And then they win initiative turn two and do it again. And they're up 8-2. And there's like six primary points even left. And they're up six. And it's like,
it's just non-interactive.
Yeah. And not to mention it was lower scoring than the other two missions. So it was kind of askew in that sense. So like you could, I mean, let's say you get a good matchup and you end up on loot and you're going to, in the main tiebreaker in a tournament is victory points. You're going to score less victory points from this good matchup. And then let's say you get a really hard matchup on secure or capture right after. And it's like, you know, you're going to lose probably and your score gets suppressed. And it's like your win was worth less than their win because you happened to get the good matchup on loot instead of capture or secure. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I hated that part of it. I'm also an elite player, so I'm happy to see that they're like one of the three missions isn't just like a total skew for me now. The old loot sucked. I was like on the verge of making a video about why I don't like it. And then they made this change and it just fixes it. Honestly, it like puts it more in line with the other missions.
Right.
But yeah, and it's like, the other thing too is I've seen TO saying like, oh, maybe we should have like more, maybe boards should be a little less dense and stuff because of Chaos Cults. And I disagree with that notion so much. Like we should not be, like we've had 2 years to figure out what a balanced board looks like. And we got there relatively. But just because this team is wildly broken doesn't mean we should be building the way that we set up terrain because we did it for a reason. And Chaos Cult is not going to be Chaos Cult forever. They're going to be a normal team.
Yeah. And I will say, like, during this tournament where we had relatively, like, I would say average kill team tournament terrain, like, as I'm playing Chaos Cult, I am getting, like, shot off the board, like, in my deployment zone.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's like, there's going to be a lot of games at tournaments that don't have Chaos Cult in it. And, you know, it'll be a shooty horde versus another team with less activations. and you're going to remember, oh yeah, this is why we put terrain on the boards. You know, it's like, just keep the terrain the same. Don't, you know, don't change the game or like change the way we've come to play the game because of this team. Let the broken stuff be broken. Anyway, moving on. We had a, what was next? We had changes to, what do we have down here next? Warp Coven got some changes.
Yeah.
So this team is like going through the ringer. Like I feel like every data slate, there's like another change. And they've kind of been like mediocre for a really long time.
Yeah.
So here's the changes that they made. First of all, Rubric Marines were formerly 2 APL. Now they're 3 APL. And the Rubric command ability that was on the Sorcerer data sheet was like, basically, if you're within 6 inches of a Rubric Marine, it when it activates, it's APL 3, which is pretty cool. But the like the problem is if you take enough Rubrics, you're playing security tac ops, and also being 2 APL sucks on primary just for like tiebreaker purposes. Like this is a Marine, it's should probably count for more. So now it's like the other way around. So like they're 3 APL base, but when they activate, if they're not within 6 of a sorcerer, they take a -1 APL. And it's like effectively creates the same like flavor, except now they can play the mission a little bit better. So I like that a lot. And they also upped the attack characteristic of fists and the gargoyle bayonet equipment to 4 from 3. So the gargoyle bayonet equipment actually is kind of interesting because if they take it, the rubric now has 4 attacks on 3s, damage 4/4, which is like an okay profile.
Yeah.
And then that was like pretty much it. That was the only change they made. So I like that change a lot. I think it's going to make them play security a lot better. Sometimes you see people taking security because they want that extra rubric, like they want the icon or something in addition to the gunner. And the team was just horrible at security. Like you can't play security with like a 8-model 2 APL team. Like,
yeah,
or 5 of the guys are 2 APL, you know. So I think that's a really good change. I don't know how much it's going to make. I don't think it's going to make them good, but I think it's a step in the right direction for Warp Coven. Next up, we have the Elucidian Starstriders. They took that rotor cannon and they gave it relentless again. So it had relentless, or no, it released and it didn't have relentless. And then they gave it relentless. And then they took it away and then they gave it back.
Was the relentless on the rotor cannon really like a that big of a problem?
Like it when it had really, it was really good, and it is, you know, it's now again, once again, it is really good.
Yeah.
But it's like, you think at some point they would have been like, I don't know, give it ceaseless or something, or like
instead of just put it on and put it back off again. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there is an in between here. And also like with Star Striders, if the Voidsmen are near the Voidsmen leader guy, they get like balanced. So like, like if you don't give him relentless, like, and you give him ceaseless, like there's, you can still like have that synergy. I think it would have been more interesting, but whatever. He just has relentless again, so we're back to that. Okay. I'm sure next data slate they'll take it away because that's just the
that's just where we're pattern. Historically, yeah.
Yeah.
What else?
Intercession squad. Right? Oh, you want to talk about the intercession?
Yeah, this is the big one. Let me get to it down here. So of course it's on the other document. Give me one sec. All right, so yeah, this was a change to chapter tactics. So chapter tactics, the big one was they changed the way methodical works.
Yeah, it was methodical and rapid changed.
Yeah, so rapid is now, while this operative is performing a normal move action, you add 1 to its movement characteristics, so you don't get like the +1 inch to charge.
Yeah, and your fallback, I guess, technically is still 6 now.
Yes,
but
yeah. And then methodical, do not worsen the ballistic skill characteristic of this operative's ranged weapons as a result of performing the overwatch action. So notably, this omits what used to be, it used to just be like, don't ever worsen the ballistic skill, basically.
Yeah, so injury and stuff.
Yeah, basically like allowing you to ignore injury. So that's basically, it translates to budgeting another command point, like turns probably like 3 through 4 for And They Shall Know No Fear, where you just get to ignore any or all APL modifiers, and all your intercession, excuse me, operatives are not injured.
Yep.
So I mean, like, it's not the worst thing. You know, you're still able to overwatch hitting on 3s or 2s in the case of the sergeants. So I mean,
how do you feel about rapid, I guess, being...
Dude, like, let me tell you, man. Having the +1 inch on your charge was, like, such a big deal, I think. On Into the Dark, I feel like you definitely still take rapid, because there's so many, like, plays you can do turn one that enable you to, like, especially if you're recon dashing, just get, like, further up the board and onto, like, those mid-board objectives and into those power positions on those boards a lot faster than you otherwise would be able to. So I still think it's worth it. Methodical, I mean, I still like it. I don't know. I like it.
Okay, I was going to say, as an intercessor player, do you think this is, like, is this enough to make you start, like, considering a replacement for Methodical?
Absolutely, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. For what it's worth, at Salt City, yes. Jeremy, and then the nerfs were in place, Jeremy took Durable and Raider, which Raider is the one where you can, first of all, it lets you charge when you're already in engagement range, so you can, like, ping pong from one guy to another. But the real big thing, I think, the good, really good thing about Raider is you can move with an engagement range. You just can't finish an engagement range, like when you're doing, like, a normal move or something, or a dash.
Yeah.
And he would use that. Like, I'd be blocking a door on Into the Dark, and I remember his gunner just walked right by me. And, holy crap, that's so good. So I don't know if Raider is the option, but, like, there's definitely cool stuff that people have not had the opportunity to really explore because it was never worth it. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know what I want to start experimenting with, honestly. I think that, like, Rapid and Raider are still two very good options. I'm still not sold on Durable just because of, like, what it gives you. One critical hit inflicts one less damage on this operative to a minimum of 3. It just feels like I can get more in another area, because the team is still durable, like, crazy durable. Like, what is it? Like, it's like 14 and 13, or it's like 14 and 15 wounds per model. You got 6 of them. So yeah. It's like, I'm not sold on durable. I'm thinking, like, Raider and Rapid, or, like, maybe aggressive, or, like, Dueler seems interesting. I'm happy with this change, honestly, Shane, because it fixes the internal balance of this team.
Yeah.
Because before, it was literally like, it's like, just take Methodical. Like, just take Methodical, and then I was sold on Rapid, and I think everybody pivoted to Rapid after a while. But yeah. I say it's like helped the internal balance of the team, but now I don't know if you take assault intercessors that often anymore. I wasn't taking them very often to begin with, honestly. Just kind of sticking with, like, the gun line intercessors and just shoot.
Well, I guess now you're more likely to take some of the chapter tactics that are better with assault intercessors, like Dueler or aggressive or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think overall they're in a better place in terms of internal balance than they were prior to the change.
Yeah, I think it's a good change. Let's move on over to Exaction Squad. So I think this is the most interesting set of changes in the whole data slate. So first of all, we got four changes here. So this was considered the worst team before this data slate. So let's see what the buff hammer brings. So first of all, you add the following to the Ruthless Efficiency ability. In addition, if the target is within circle of another friendly exaction squad operative, that ranged weapon has the P1 critical hit rule for that shooting attack. This is huge, I think. So it comes up mostly when you have a guy like in combat, like a shield guy gets in combat with like a Marine, and then a shotgun walks up and shoots the Marine because of the Ruthless Efficiency ability. And then your shotgun now is P1, because the big problem with the team is that they play against elites and they have like almost no AP on the entire team. And it's like, what do I do? So that is a huge thing. I really like that change. Next up, add one to the wounds characteristic of all operatives. So this is amazing. So 8 wounds on almost everybody, 9 wounds on the leader. I love it. I like that a lot. They've only got 11 bodies, and that's not going to change, I don't think. So I like making the bodies they have just a teeny tiny bit beefier.
Only 11 bodies? Jeez.
I know, right? And then you give the next change is you give the lethal 5 special rule to the Cyber Mastiff's Bite, the Marksman's sniper shotgun thing, and the Revel Atom scoped shot pistol. So the Marksman having lethal 5 and a sniper is a pretty big one here compared to the other two. I still don't know if you take the dog. Maybe you do. I don't know. The Revel Atom's cool too, but he's more of like a tech piece than a, like, you're not taking him for the scoped shot pistol, but yeah. I guess it is nice that it has that rule now, especially when, you know, you have P1 sometimes. So these weapons are the guns here are critting a little bit easier when those situations come up and they're getting the P1 trigger more often. That's pretty cool. And then the next change, so there's execution order tactical ploy. So I'll explain what this used to be. So it was you pay 1 CP, it's a tactical ploy, it's a once per game tactical ploy. When you activate your leader, you pick an enemy operative in line of sight of your leader, not visible, line of sight. And for the rest of the game, you get relentless whenever you attack them. This, like, obviously relentless is great, but in my opinion, this ploy, as it was before, was horrible. It was so restrictive because you can't just pick a guy. You can't pay the CP and pick a guy and get that once per game. You'd have to do it when you activate your leader. It's not even like during the leader's activation. So you can't activate the leader and walk up and use the ploy and then get relentless. You have to activate the leader and they have to already see a guy. And then you pay a CP and you get relentless against them. And then it's just that. That's it for the whole game. Once per game. You can't use it more than once. So they've cleaned it up a little bit. Now it costs 0 the first time you use it, and you can use it more than once. So it's still a pain in the butt to trigger it, in my opinion, but it's free the first time you do it, and you can do it more than once. Like, I think this is a lot better, way, way better. It's like now it's pretty useful, because I think before, man, I hated that ploy. I still hate the way it's like restrictive, but at least it's, you know, it's not a huge investment.
Yeah.
But these changes, man, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to evaluate because of the meta that we live in right now.
Yes. Yeah. the shadow of the chaos cult looms large, I'll say.
Yeah, it does. I think when the game gets more normal again, knock on wood.
Yeah.
The exaction squad could have some legs now. I'm really curious about them.
Okay.
To be honest, like 8 wounds on everybody, and now you have the P1 shotguns and, you know, a little bit of lethal 5, and I'm into it.
Yeah, so you've talked about them a little bit as a auxiliary option for the Inquisition squad.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're kind of like the clear favorites in that faction, or do you think the Kasserkin or the Navis Breachers are still
Navis
there?
Navis Breachers... I think Navis Breachers are like obscene with how good they are in that, because for some reason, Navis Breachers get six guys. Like Exaction gets five, Castringer gets five, Vecard gets six, but at least Vecard are seven wound, five up saves. The Breachers get six guys. They have four up saves. Some of them are eight wounds. One of the guys they could take is the Endurant, who has 11 wounds and like a two up save. And they can take the melee guy with the five up feel no pain. And it's like, what on earth is this? Like, yeah. Well, why do they get six? So, I mean, I think Navis Breachers are just like kind of broken with Inquisition. It's just way too much. But Exaction is like top three for me. I don't know if I like it more than Vecard, but you know, against Vecard, you take like you take Vecard against like elites because you take Vecard and you have like five AP2 guns on the board.
Yeah.
But with Exaction, I don't know. They like fill a weird niche, and now the models are like pretty beefy. If they were to nerf Navis Breachers and like you only get five guys in Navis Breachers, then I think it starts to get a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I think there's some gold to be mined with Exaction Squad, though.
Okay.
I want to see somebody pick up the RBDs.
Yeah. I'm looking for an excuse to finally get hers built and painted. So
yeah.
Other than the fact that those models are amazing looking. All right.
And then we have the Hearthkin Salvagers. So their steady advance ability changed. So before it was like literally nothing. It was useless because it was their movement characteristic couldn't be modified below two circle, which like 3 months before this team came out, that became
that was already a
rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like clearly the printing press was just like, you know, this was already,
it was already shipped. Yeah.
Yeah. So they basically didn't have a faction rule, but now study advance has been changed to, while a friendly Hearthkin Salvager operative is performing a normal move, add 1 inch to its movement characteristic. So when it does a normal move, it moves 5 inches. The big problem with this team is how ridiculously slow they are. At least that's one of the issues. And I think this is, I don't think they wanted to make a lot of changes, but I think that this is a step in the right direction, especially considering it's like a small little change, which is, you know, what they're looking for at this stage of the team's like existence.
And then, last,
Ryan, you want to read the really long Chaos Cult nerf that we got?
Yeah, so many nerfs to this team.
Unplayable
at this point. Chaos Cult, the Iconarch's Ruinous Invigoration ability, you reduce damage to a minimum of 3. Instead of 2.
Wow. So
cricket. And yeah, that's it. That's all they got.
That's all they did. I mean,
there are, and a lot of people in the kill team community has talked about the probably like hundreds of different ways that you could nerf Chaos Cult. And like most of them are pretty good. I don't think there is a lack of things that you can tone down in this team and make them not overpowered as hell. Seeing this was disappointing, but like overall with the rest of the balanced data slate, I'm pretty happy with it. But I mean, Chaos Cult are the big dogs in the meta right now.
Yeah. You know, it was like what we were just saying with Hearthkin. Like, the team is so new. You know, they didn't want to pull the trigger so quickly, but I think this was one instance where it would have been completely justified, and I think it would have been a good look.
Yeah.
I hope we don't have to wait 3 months for another data slate. I was on Travis's podcast, and he, like, mentioned something about, is this true? Are they going to do, like a data slate for 40K, like, sooner than they normally would because of... I heard a rumor about that.
They already did. They already came out with a balanced data slate for 40K, and what it did was, instead of like, I don't want to get into like the specifics of it. Obviously, we're a kill team podcast here, but yeah, they basically came out with like an emergency FAQ, I would call it, and it did not a whole lot to affect the current state of the game. So like there's a precedent for them releasing stuff ahead of like the quarterly FAQ schedule that they've adopted across most of their competitive games. But I honestly it's 50-50 if we get another's rules change to the team before or after that like 3 or 4 month mark.
Yeah, so I mean, if that doesn't happen, which I don't think it will, but you know, fingers crossed. If that doesn't happen, I've heard some chatter, nothing serious yet, but like the discussion of like should TOs, like major TOs, consider a ban if it gets really bad and it like I've heard this already from a few different TOs. So here's my take on it. Some people have said, oh, maybe we should like there should be like community house rule, like FAQ or to fix the team. Or maybe we should ban them or something. So in my opinion, if we're considering those options, and it has to get really bad for me to like consider something like this, I would much rather see a ban than like a community FAQ. I hate that direction of like us trying to fix the team. Like the team's broken. Don't try to fix them. Let them be broken. And if you really don't want them to ruin your tournament, just ban them. I think that's a better precedent to set. I don't think it should be happening right now. I think like I'm saying like if it's like September or something and there's no sign of anything and we, you know, who knows, like Nova's coming up or something. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's like big conversations about that at that point. I would just urge TOs to not try and like solve the problem on their own. Like, don't come up with a weird FAQ. Like, we have a game that is like living and breathing, and GW has done a really good job of supporting it. We should not be making changes to teams for our events. The ban is comes to that, and I wouldn't call for it right now, but that's just my take on that.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. If you start like house ruling stuff, especially for this team, it's like like where do you even start? Like I could tell you where I would start.
Oh yeah, I have a lot of ideas
But
too.
a million of, but a ton of other kill team players have a ton of other ideas as to where you start. And at that point, you're just like, I mean, honestly, it just precipitates like fracturing the community by fracturing the rules. If you go to one tournament and Chaos Cult has different rules for how they're played at another tournament, and then this tournament didn't house rule and they're just letting them play it as is, and then another tournament has banned them outright, it just confuses the players and it's bad for the health of the game competitively. So,
So,
yeah.
from a selfish standpoint, the biggest reason I don't want them banned or anything is because I want a golden ticket with them. And I would feel bad if the team got banned and somebody else didn't have the opportunity to do that. You know, that
That's
would just
so
feel
true.
unfair,
Yeah,
unfair to me.
that's very true. That is a good point.
So I don't want to see that happen. I mean, fortunately, I guess I technically won 2 golden tickets and one of them wasn't with cultists. So I feel less greasy, but still, I think it's just, you know, that would suck if some people just hopped on the train early and got their golden ticket and then the team got banned and nobody else could do that.
Yeah, that does feel unfair.
But yeah, hopefully, I mean, yeah, maybe we'll get lucky and we'll get some emergency stuff, but it hasn't happened before. So, in the meantime, everybody just needs to main Hierotech Circle because that's the best odds of beating them.
Yeah, or hey, Nurgle Legionnaires on open, you know?
Just kill 10 guys and then you got
Just kill 10 guys, and then if you're lucky, you'll win. All
it.
right. So that about does it for this episode of the Command Point Podcast. Thank you guys all for tuning in and listening. If you're listening to us on YouTube, make sure to subscribe, hit that like button, leave a comment below telling us what you think of this episode. What would you do maybe to change Chaos Cult? I don't know. I'm kind of interested in hearing what you guys think. Outside of that, if you are interested at all or able to help support Shane and I a little bit further, we do have a Patreon. We do have a YouTube channel membership. And then we also have merch. And the merch is the best part of this channel, honestly. The mugs, the mugs are great. Mugs are great. The stickers are as big as my face, as you guys have probably seen. And these hoodies, Shane, I know it's like July right now, but like come wintertime, you're going to want more of these hoodies.
Yeah, the hoodies are nice. The t-shirt's nice too.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I went with the premium option this time around, so.
Yeah, so I want to see people, if you guys have bought Command Point merch, take a picture and send it to us, and we'll give you a shout on the channel too.
Yeah. Outside of that, once again, thank you guys for watching and tuning in, and we will see you all again in the next one.